Sometimes the most important statements in our scriptures are the ones that we read right over, hidden in plain view. Listen again this morning to what Jesus says. You are the salt of the earth. Full stop. You are the light of the world. Full stop. Friends, in this section of the Sermon on the Mount, today Jesus is preaching in declarative sentences. Notice that he isn't saying, if you do this, then you're the salt of the earth. Or when you pray this way, then you're the light of the world. You are salt. You are light. Friends, this is our gift of identity, of affirmation, of trust. And as salt and light, we have a responsibility, a role to play in this world. But what? Salt and light, the stuff of everyday matter, elements and energy. But why salt and light? Well, salt, especially in this first century culture, preserved and purified. In addition to being an additive at meals, it was a crucial element in the preservation of meat and other food that needed to last. But salt losing its taste? What in the world? It's as if Jesus is playing with absurdity, attempting to wake us up by proposing something so ridiculous that we have to pay attention. Salt losing its taste? What good is it then? To which Jesus says, exactly, what good is it then? And light. Light exposes, illuminates, drives out darkness. We bring things to the light. It's what sunshine laws are all about. But in a world that glows from space, with the light of street lamps and parking lot fluorescents and all other sorts of night lights, in a world that is continuously on, in a world in which we flip a switch with our finger and as much light as we need surrounds us, in this world, we often forget how important a light piercing the darkness can be. Both light and salt serve to intensify. They enhance what already exists. They magnify whatever is around them. They expose and halt infection and transform all that they come into contact with. Light and salt change the world. Like many of you, I have been transfixed these past couple of weeks by the movements towards freedom that have swept across North Africa and the Middle East. The breaking of yokes that began in Tunisia, fueled by the remarkable WikiLeaks revelations about the tyranny and greed of President Ben Ali and his family, this revolution is moving at startling speed around the Mediterranean. In Egypt especially, the bravery and determination of young and old, women and men, Christian and Muslim, has been breathtaking. Especially when set against the dark backdrop of secret prisons, brutal interrogations, and the grip of absolute power that has shackled the majority of that nation. When set against this largely peaceful uprising has rightly sent shockwaves across Egypt and indeed the world. There have been many powerful images and stories during this nearly two-week conflict. One exchange in particular, though, seems to run in parallel with our portion of the Sermon on the Mount read this morning. It was an interview recorded on Friday, just a few days ago, by a columnist from the New York Times, Nicholas Kristof. Kristof was reporting from a makeshift hospital on the outskirts of Tahrir Square, and there were wounded everywhere. Bruises, lacerations, gunshot wounds, trample marks. And there to tend the wounded were over 150 doctors, freely offering their skill in the midst of the chaos. Kristof, clearly amazed by the courage of these protesters, was interviewing one of the doctors, a bespectacled man who looked to be in his early 60s and who had driven 120 miles from his home outside Cairo that day, leaving his will with his wife and his mother. Asking the doctor what brought him to Tahrir Square, it was the young people, their energy and courage. Kristof followed up with a standard journalistic question. "And what is your name?" "My name is..." The doctor paused. Kristof, remembering the inherent dangers of the situation, followed with, "Or do you want to say your name?" The doctor continued, "No, it's okay. Now it's a freedom era. My name..." He then turned towards the camera, emphatically holding up his finger. "My name is Dr. Maged El Gendi. I am a protester. I am here as a doctor, as a patriot Egyptian." A simple question, a profound moment, and critical for us this morning for a few reasons. Because when I heard what the doctor said, something... This doctor, someone largely protected under the current regime, someone able to live a comfortable life in the midst of a society where millions exist on the fringes. What I heard when Dr. Maged El Gendi gave his name was a powerful declaration that he was no longer afraid. He would no longer uphold what was destroying the people around him. He knew what was right. The young people of his country had awoken in him and millions of others an energy, a light that must shine, a light that scatters the dark shadows of oppression. And regardless of what the predictable response might be, and for many, it is beatings and torture and death. Regardless, he was now free, free to simply speak his name. "My name is Dr. Maged El Gendi." You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. This too is true of both salt and light. They both act in relationship with something else. Salt preserves and flavors, light illumines and warms, but always in relationship. The same is true of our following as Christians. This is not about our individual moral righteousness. It's not about making sure that I'm all set by myself, just me and Jesus. No, we have received this gift of identity not to savor it on our own or to carefully keep it under wraps so that we have control over it, but so that it and we come into contact with others, changing us and changing them as we do so. This is why our passage from Isaiah offers such a clarion call, heard even more clearly this week in our world. The prophet writes, "Look, you serve only your own interest on your fast day and oppress all your workers. Look, you fast only to quarrel and to fight and to strike with the wicked fist. Is this not the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover them, and to not hide yourself from your own kin." This cannot be about a single person, you or me, taking care of our own duty, getting right with ourselves and our God on our own. As one scholar has clarified, these are more than one-time actions. These are behaviors with broad social consequences. Actions that will restructure relationships. God's desire is not for singular pious acts, but for a whole cloth dismantling of unjust relationships. We, as salt and light, our very purpose is to break the yokes of oppression, to let the oppressed go free, to root out the places where injustice has taken hold, to root it out and expose it to the light. What Jesus was preaching to the people of Israel centuries ago is just as fundamental to our lives this day. That is why salt that wasn't serving its function was so ridiculous. Why lighting a lamp and then hiding it under a bushel basket was so incomprehensible. That's not what salt and light are for. Another biblical scholar reminds us of this, that God had called Israel to be the salt of the earth, but Israel was behaving like everyone else, with its power politics, its factional squabbles, its militant revolutions. How could God keep the world from going bad, the main function of salt in the ancient world, if Israel, his chosen salt, had lost its distinctive taste? You are salt, and you are light. And if you are light, you cannot help but illuminate. That is what you are. And if you are salt, you cannot help but preserve the good. That is what you are. Friends, this is what it means to be a disciple, a follower of the Anointed One, to be God's light and salt in our world. This is what it's all about. So what are we to do? Ignore it? To shrink from it? Hide our light under a bushel? Frankly, we spend too much of our lives doing just that. But in the end, we're still the salt of the earth. We're still the light of the world. We're just hiding, afraid to speak our own name, for fear of pain, for fear of death, for fear of change. Still, the world needs salt and light now. In Egypt, in the United States, in California, in South Berkeley, in the Iron Triangle, in West Oakland. Not just in the dismantling of oppression, but also in the rebuilding of what must follow. Once the rocks are no longer being thrown, Once we no longer stand side by side, united only by our opposition to a common enemy, then is when we will need to rediscover what it is to stand together, to claim the common ground of righteousness, to persevere in preserving the good and in bearing the light in the darkest corners of this world. Now and then, remember, friends, you are salt and you are light.